For November the 4th, 2016, we talk about Uwe Boll quitting movies, World of Final Fantasy, and host a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 171. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
And I'm Jala Prendez.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, I'm slacking, is what I'm doing. I'm so sorry that I missed last week.
I thought you meant you were hanging out on, like, the Slack.
I mean,
yeah, I know.
I've always got it open. You want me to read some cool chat logs?
Well, that's what I'm usually doing, you know, like when there's idle moment or two.
Jala, so where is everyone? Cole, I got things loaded up. Dennis, logging in now. This is the exciting stuff that you're missing out by not being in the Level backstage. Also, pictures of Halloween costumes.
Yeah, super cute niece and nephew. It was adorable. Yeah.
So I'm very sorry that we missed last week. It was right after Portland Retro Games Expo, and I was just steamrolled. I was down for the count. So I appreciate the patience that has been afforded the show and me, you know, for this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think people get that life happens, and you'd rather have us, you know, excited and happy to be here than burnt out husks.
Cole, what? I just ran a half marathon 2 days ago, and I'm here, and I'm fine.
You didn't have to fly in a plane, though. I mean, if I was going to stack those two things up, yeah, no, I don't know. I have no excuse. That's why I said I was slacking.
I went to Austin and I like got off of a plane and was speed racer across part of Texas to get there to go to the meetup and drag your drunk asses back to your place so you could do your presentation the next day.
Oh gosh.
I want to hear it.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said I was slacking. That's why I was contrite.
Okay.
Jala, I already feel terrible generally all the time.
I just have to rub it in a little bit more.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah.
Salt in the wound.
What?
Salt in the wound.
Mm, okay. Yeah. No, it's fine. I'll just be over here. I guess just, yeah. Portland was fun. And lots of exciting stuff has happened. We announced Duck Stream. When that's happening, I'm going to want to talk with you guys offline actually after this, just because I may require some assistance, but we will talk about that later. But yeah, if you're listening, that is going to be the weekend of the 11th, so 11th, 12th, and 13th. I'm going to be, for my portion of it, streaming as many Resident Evil games as I can.
Oh, Jala's eyes just lit up.
Not the not the over the shoulder shooting ones that she likes. I don't think I'm going to get to those. I'm doing series chronological, so starting with Resident Evil Zero and then going forward from that. But yeah, that's I'm picking up Saturday going into Sunday, and then Friday prior to that, the first shift is going to be the Portland crew doing a whole bunch of wild and varied stuff.
Exciting.
Yeah, we're going to be supporting that is a charity event we do every year in support of the Transactive Gender Center out of Portland, Oregon. Does a lot of cool stuff.
Which, I correct me if I'm wrong, I think I remembered hearing last year that Duckfeed had become like their second largest single donor.
I think it was even just for that year, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the only ones above us were like some major university. So it's freaking cool.
Yeah, well, this year, like, we are right at the edge. So all of the Duckfeed events combined, the two previous Duck Streams and then Duck Spring, which the community, including you two, did here earlier in the year, we're at like $8,600 total contributed now. So we're going to break 10,000 total this year, which is ridiculous.
This community is fantastic. Like, yeah. I love you guys so much.
Yeah. I was kicking myself. It was like 2 days after I got back. I thought I totally could have gone to Transactive and just like taken a tour and see what they did. But no, I didn't do that.
Oh man.
But yeah, that is always a really super fun time. Watch me get loopy and panicky as I don't sleep, sit still for way longer than I normally sit still, and yeah, play scary games. Yeah. We also restructured the Patreon. That was a big deal. People can get those premium shows much more readily now, which is good. Hop on that. Yay. Exquisite Suffering and all that. I know it's a big time for the network. This is always like these 2 months, October and November, are always a big deal for some reason.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, I have Patreon, go check it, make sure it's good. Yep. And if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't have Patreon, what's that? Go check it. It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's patreon.com/tuckfeedtv. How about you, Jolly? You said that you just ran the half marathon. I saw your time. Yeah. It looked impressive to me.
Yeah. Okay, so let me first explain that, because I don't want there to be any confusion, the full marathon is in January. That's the one that I'm still raising money for the Alzheimer's Association for.
Yes.
This is the first of the warm-up series, and I have one race every 2 weeks. So actually, during Duckstream on that Sunday, I'm going to be doing a 25K in bright and early in the morning.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm going to be running. Ooh, I'm going to be running that morning. And then 2 weeks after that, the same day as a belly dance student show, because I also do belly dance, I have a 30K race.
Holy shit.
And so I have to race in the morning, come home, turn around, and then do two different choreographies during the student show that evening. And
yeah.
one of which includes fan veils. And I have to be all flowy and like, you know, whatever. And I'm going to be so tired.
So yeah. You need to be like that guy who juggled for the marathon and just do belly rolls for the entire marathon.
Well, there are people who do stuff like joggling. If you don't know what joggling is, it's what you think it is. Somebody running and juggling at the same time. And that's been a thing for like almost 3 decades now. Mm. It's a thing.
Show off.
Seriously, Google it. Yeah, seriously. Like what would make you feel possessed of the urge to juggle the entire time? Like this one guy actually set a record here recently because he did a marathon in under 3 hours and he was juggling the whole time and he never dropped a ball.
Hmm.
So that's really crazy. But anyway, so yeah, about my half marathon. It was my first long race. And bear in mind, I only started running in April. And in July, when I first began training for the marathon, I had only run like maybe 5 miles at a stretch on any given day. Like I hadn't ever run further than 5 miles. So when I started, I was in the third of 4 total pace groups in my running club. And with this time that I put into this half marathon, I have catapulted up to the very top of the second tier or the very bottom of the fastest tier. So I have gotten a lot faster in the last couple of months or so. And yeah, like I was in the top third overall, top fourth in 4 women in my age group, and top fifth of women overall participating. So not bad for my very first race. If I had pushed a little bit further, I would have had like a sub 2 hour time. So for anybody who cares, it was like 2 hours, 1 minute and 57 seconds. So yay.
Yeah.
So well yeah, done. I've been invited to run with the fastest group, which is full of triathletes who are all doing Ironman. So, yeah. That's
Wait, they're running in that armor?
Yeah, they are. Totally. There was a guy
it's
in
really,
a banana
they're shooting,
suit
they're just
and there was a guy. There was a guy in a banana suit running, and I was like, I don't understand. But then again, at least you would really easily find your race photos.
Mm,
you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
There's only one banana on the whole course. There's one Deadpool. There is one banana. There is one Wonder Woman and very many people in tutus, men and women both. I do not understand the tutus.
Were there any like group costumes?
No, other than like multiple people in tutus that are all like, you know, matching tutus, matching shirts and things like that's about it. But they're all like, whatever. There wasn't like a themed group or anything.
Yeah.
But so anyway,
I just what I would like to see is one person dressed up as Pac-Man and then just like he's chasing down a bunch of people dressed up like ghosts. That's what I want to see.
That would be such a pain to run in.
All of this sounds like a pain.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the thing is that, okay, like, I didn't realize how much hidden aggression I had about running tutus, but I really don't like them, to the point that somebody was like, oh, come on, Jala, won't you wear a tutu? You'd look so cute. I'm like, hell no, blah, blah, blah. And I just, like, got into a big rage about it. I was like, no. Because I like to have, like, compression shorts on and streamlined and, you know, like, I don't like a lot of mess and stuff flopping around. Like, no, thank you. I don't want a big itchy tutu in my way.
No. Well, that's awesome that you posted that time. Like, you've had those games over the past couple of months. Like, that's amazing to hear.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll see how fast I'll get. I have no idea how fast I will be next year. We'll see.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. Dennis, how about you? What you been up to?
Yeah, well, last night was Halloween, and so that was fun. We did a family costume of the Wizard of Oz, which was both very recognizable and very low maintenance. like the most complicated thing was a lion onesie for Milo, and that wasn't very complicated. I did the Tin Man and just like spray painted a funnel silver and you know made it a hat. So you know we kept it pretty low key, but that was a lot of fun. And then I also this week finished watching Stranger Things, which I know I'm late to the party, but holy shit, that was quite the ride.
It is very good. It deserves its hype.
Anything that can get me to take a series's or a season's worth of time out of playing video games and put it towards watching TV has to be really good, and that crossed that threshold easily.
Yeah. No, it's great. We were talking about this offline, but I was very surprised that I was able to get my parents to watch it. Like, my stepdad really likes it, and my mom tolerated it, which she normally doesn't do for anything spooky. Did you watch that with Jen?
Yeah, we did. And you definitely hit that point. I think for us, it was like episode the fourth episode from the end, which I say that, but that's like halfway through the season. And it's like you just hit the point where it's like, well, we're finishing this. There's no way we're not finishing this.
Yeah, we've reached terminal velocity. We're going to get to the end of this. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like the fourth or the third from the end or something like that. But so that's nice to have it all, you know, laid out for us. Did those episodes release all at one time?
Yeah, that was the usual Netflix binge model.
Yeah, I like that because then, you know, I can get it when I want it. But I do lament a little bit the amount of fun you have speculating on stuff.
Hmm.
Like, that's all happening between seasons now, which is good. There's lots of fan theories out there, and those were fun to read. And probably, like, we finished the series at 11 at night and then spent until probably, like, 12:30 just looking up fan theories and Googling different questions we had and all that. Yeah. So you still have that. It's just you don't get it nearly as often.
Right.
Especially when they're doled out.
The rhythm is different. It's almost like the distance between books in a series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that is what I think about when I think about that model, which is like I wouldn't do like theorizing with somebody else in between chapters. You know.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. And I think, you know, the binge model works really well for something like Orange is the New Black or the Arrested Development season or the stuff that is. Lighter isn't the right word, although those both are, but you know, less mystery suspense driven.
Yeah.
I think it really does lose something with a series like Stranger Things.
Yeah.
But that should not be a detriment to the series as a whole at all. Like, it was still phenomenal.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we've been busy, it sounds like. Yeah. But we're not too busy to do a show, at least this week. Right. Yeah. but we've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And let's go do the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, you have some follow-up.
Yes, I do. So the last time we were on, I think it was the last time we were on, anyway, sometime recently, I talked about the voice actor strike that was going on because SAG-AFTRA was targeting some big gaming companies for increased pay and some other, you know, improvements to the working conditions for stunt actors and voice actors that are being used in video games. So that happened. It really was a thing. They are on strike. And there's currently a poo-flinging party going on. The Screen Actors Guild and the 11 video game companies that they targeted are going back and forth, and basically the guild is accusing the game companies of erroneous assertions, namely that EA, Activision, and the other companies say that they proposed a workable compromise for a 9% pay increase and better working conditions. But this proposal shows that they care about the vocal stress and other concerns, you know, that the guild had brought up. But the guild says that they can't unilaterally decide to agree to this thing. And if the companies want all the members to vote on whether the deal is acceptable, then they can arrange that. But the companies don't want to let it be a vote for the union members. And because of that, the guild thinks that the reason for that is because they are worried that other groups like programmers and designers might get ideas and, you know, decide that they're going to rise up and, you know, demand stuff too. Yeah. And in a statement that they issued on Monday, SAG-AFTRA said, "This is not an industry with the best track record of labor practices. They have a long documented history of overworking their employees to the point of damaging their physical and emotional health. Mm-hmm. Our performers are at the vanguard of demanding better treatment, but they are not. They are surely not the only video game employees in need of it."
Right.
So. So that's what's going on with that. They are like at a standstill, and, you know, like the video game companies are like, "But we gave you a proposal," and they're like, "Yeah, but we want to vote on it. We don't want to just decide for everybody."
Right.
Because apparently 97% of the union members were in agreement about striking in the first place. So it's pretty clear that they're unhappy with the conditions. Yeah. So.
Huh. Well, yep. That is like that is complicated, as a lot of these are. Like, the voice actors are definitely in a better position for any of that, because historically they've always been like union, you know, or they've always been organized, right? Like, I couldn't see it working to have programmers or any kind of designers or anybody, yeah, you know, who's kind of like this is a film term, but like below the line. I couldn't see any below the line people actually like successfully doing that, either because of contracts or because of the fact that so many people are willing to replace them. Right. I just don't know how, you know, in that competitive environment, and that's even assuming, I'm not even saying that organization is the right thing for this, or, you know, for the ways that they're doing it. I don't know. I'm kind of hemming and hawing here, but like, this just sounds like any other labor dispute at this point.
It is. It's pretty much a part and parcel of the usual going back and forth between a union and any, you know, large corporation that they're dealing with. But of course, this affects, you know, like how long they go on strike for and whatever, you know, may affect how the games, you know, like the finishing touches on the games are being put on there, you know, for 2017. So depending upon how this pans out, it may or may not really, you know, impact too many people's games, but we'll see.
Yeah. You know what I'm thinking?
Mm.
Let's scab. Hi, I'm Nolan North. This is Nathan Drake. Oh no, yeah. My brother, he backstabbed me.
Yeah.
Ooh, I want to try.
Okay.
This is Scully. Nathan Drake, you're dumb.
Jolly, you do one.
No. I cannot. I haven't even played those games.
No, it doesn't have to be that. Like, he decided to pick it up. Like, do like a Resident Evil one. Like, look at me, I'm Ada.
No, good God, no. You had to pick the character I hate the most. Okay, what?
Who am I working for? No. I don't know. Am I really me? I'm in an awful lot of places at once. Hi, I'm Ada.
Nailed it.
Right.
Cut, print, ship, scam.
I want to really see that happen. Like, have your voice coming out of Ada's head.
Now, that would be, if it didn't require like just a tremendous amount of work, I would love to see voice packs being sold on stuff the same way that they do for like TomTom.
Oh, where, yeah.
Snoop Dogg.
That would be pretty awesome.
Like, oh. I just want Soap to sound like Snoop Dogg in Modern Warfare.
Yeah, it's people are talking about getting a duck feed pack for Darkest Dungeon, which would sound like fun.
Oh, man.
Oh no, I'm going crazy. Look at me. Yeah. Oh man, I don't know why this is like why people think this is so hard.
Yeah, this is really pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this, people are whining for no good reason, it feels like.
Quality of life.
Oh, what do you mean? I can't speak anymore because I had to scream like I was dying. Okay. Huh. Dennis, you have a story, since we're in showbiz mode. Why don't we pivot over to our good friend Uwe Boll?
Yeah, he's out. He is formally said that he is done making movies. Not just video game movies, which are, you know, universally hated and panned, from Postal to Alone in the Dark to In the Name of the King, which was based on Dungeon Siege, to, I mean, basically anything that he's touched, he's ruined. But he's just out of the movie game in general, citing, you know, not the vitriol with which the video game community has come after him or anything like that, but just that he thinks the medium is kind of dead. And, you know, in a world of Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff, like it just doesn't make sense to make movies anymore.
The market is dead. Without a good DVD business anymore, there is no hope for recovery. Streaming, Netflix, etc. is all great for customers, but for producers, the money you make with them is 10% of what you make with Blockbuster videos.
Yep, you got
hey dog. If your livelihood depends on things being inconvenient for the people who give you money,
yeah, this is a long time coming if that's the case.
Yeah.
What I found funny is that in the exact same interview, he commented on how he would be interested to do Grand Theft Auto as a movie sometime. So, I mean, you know, saying that he's retiring or whatever you want to call it from the guy who once challenged film critics to a literal boxing match.
There exists a video of him just fucking pressing the off button on Rich Lotak's Kayanka from Something Awful. Like, it's crazy.
But, you know, so I wouldn't take anything that he says to be, you know, on limits or off limits, or just don't put too much faith in it. But you know, he seems rather at peace with his time. You know, he kind of claims credit for getting the whole video game movie thing started, which, yeah. So he's rationalized it in his mind.
Yeah.
And he seems to be, you know, if someone comes, you know, waltzing up to him with Grand Theft Auto rights, sounds like we get him back in. But that was, I think, the most interesting thing in the article is that kind of if you read between the lines, what happened was he, you know, basically doing licensed video game movies was a way to buy an audience for him.
Right.
And when he started doing it, that was super cheap. Now that video games are a little bit more recognized, have a little bit more of a mainstream presence, those rights have got really, really expensive, and therefore buying the audience has gotten really, really difficult and expensive.
Yeah.
And I think that, more than anything else, has chased him out.
And also, as he just over the course of... If your career consists of nothing but building the case against yourself, like, he straight up Shyamalan'd himself a little bit.
Yeah, really.
You know? Like... and so like he casts it as, oh, I wanted to do this Drek in order to make my passion projects, such as a lighthearted comedy drama about Darfur.
Yeah, right. You know. I just did this Drek so I could do this other Drek.
Right. There's a longstanding, I guess, conspiracy theory would be the right way to put this, but at least explanation for his career, which is due to German and European tax codes, he was kind of running a producer's bit where he got a ton of investment to do his stuff because a film that lost money would make more money for the investors because they could write the losses off in a way that was more beneficial than if they actually made any money off of this stuff.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Uwe Boll story starring Matthew Broderick.
And so just like it is really it's hard to take him seriously. First off, I'm retiring. It equates to I just want attention, guys. But like right. When he says, OK, I'm done. There's business here. When he finishes, or at least when this article finishes, you are safe now. No more Uwe Boll video game based movies. Enjoy the so much better ones like Silent Hill 2, Prince of Persia, Resident Evil 1, 2, 3 and 4 and Warcraft. Ha 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 ha. Like, dog.
And I should cite, this is, was over an email interview, so he literally typed ha 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 into his email.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So you might want to ease back on the salt, dog. I'm worried about your blood pressure. I'm your doctor, Uwe Boll. Look at me. That's me auditioning to be his Uwe Boll's doctor in a video game voiceover.
The Uwe Boll video game. That's, you know, that that'll be the twist, is he, when he actually does a video game, it is sublime.
Mm. Like he understands video games so much more now, because
yeah. So he transfers over to do video games based on movies, and it just cracks the code. Like,
what I thought you were gonna do is like, that's the way to trick him into making him like an autobiographic film, is to make a, is to make Uwe Boll the video game, so he adapts that. Oh man, it is like 2005 up in this piece as we're making these sick Uwe Boll jokes.
Yeah, right. So yeah, bye. You know, not gonna miss you. I can't.
Thank you for making sure the adaptation to K will run for years to come.
Damn straight.
Man.
Oh, do you have anything to say about that, Jala?
No, I have nothing. I have nothing.
I have nothing for this man. No. Uwe Boll. So mine's going to be pretty quick. Jala's favorite series, Zero Escape.
Where's the table?
I removed all the tables, Jala. How the tables have oh boy.
How the tables have not turned.
They've turned, you just can't see it happen. So it was revealed on the Sony blog that some remakes, not so much remakes, but just kind of ports of 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors and Virtue's Last Reward would be coming to both the PS4 and Vita. Vita is not so surprising, just because Virtue's Last Reward was made available on Vita. But 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors, the game version, not just the not just the visual novel one that we got on iOS, is escaping the DS prison that it was stuck on. It has jumped the cart, guys. It's jumped the cart.
In one reality, it has. In the other, you know, branching realities.
Right.
Oh, man.
And Jala must go back in time and stop it. but these are being put out on kind of modern-ish hardware. It's weird to say the Vita is modern, because it's nothing but cobwebs when I turn that thing on. Kind of being re-released together as Zero Escape, the Nonary Games, which is the name of the fictional kind of killing game that you play in both of those. There was a follow-up. Spike Chunsoft came out and said, yeah, it's going to be on Steam too. So yeah, like, we've had long conversations on the network and here about whether or not these are kind of inspired little dimensional time travel stories, or if they are incredibly frustrating dreck. Wherever you fall on that, I'm going to retreat to the shelter of, it's good for things to be available.
Yeah, the thing that gets me here is it says that it's going to have the 999 will be a full remake with new HD visuals. And I'm just wondering what that looks like, since it's kind of, you know, animated frames. Mm-hmm. Like, how much more high def can it get?
I mean, so what I can think is the assets right now are very low res because they were made for a DS screen. Very chunky, very blocky. There are only so many poses that you have to do. I think that they're going to go back in, and this is just speculation. I think that the way that they can accomplish that is just to either take the original art and then scan it back in at a higher res, or just redraw them so they fit in better.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to get like a VLR kind of animated talking dude thing. I think that would be a bigger deal. Like, they wouldn't just pack this in with Virtue's Last Reward as like an archival thing, if that was the case.
Yeah, I would put put these games in the category of games that are just always going to look good because the assets have a very distinct style.
Mm-hmm.
So it struck me as something that like was not, you know, horribly in need of an HD remake.
Yeah, I just, what I would think is, man, oh man, like, trying to blow up anything, like, I've emulated some DS games. If you blow those up to anything bigger than DS size, they get ugly quick.
Well, see, like,
I mean, that's good perspective to have.
Yeah.
I'm a bit conflicted about it, because, see, I want to actually play the actual game of 999 because I played the visual, well, quote unquote, played the visual novel part of 999, and I liked that just fine. And I kind of want to know how I like the actual game part of it because I like room escapey type stuff, and I was fine with the visual novel that I had, although it wasn't really a game. So, you know, I want that, but I don't want to see VLR again. So I don't know. I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
So I'm a little conflicted.
I don't know. It's interesting that it's coming to PS4. I do not understand the audience that would want to play a visual novel on a non-portable system.
I know. I'm just like, you know, I have some VisiNovs that are on Steam, but I want to play them on my Vita. I don't want to play them on Steam. I want to play all of these things mobile, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Visual novels are kind of like JRPGs. I never want to play them not in bed. So I don't have anything more to say. I think that's the end of this story.
Okay.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where usually we ask you a question and you answer, but this is a free play, so we flipped it. Dennis, what is free play for the people who might be new?
Yeah, free play is what any other show would call their normal write-in section, where you ask questions and we do our best to answer them, probably go off on tangents and, you know, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
But we, you know, it had been a minute since we did this. So I felt like it was due time for us to do that. And you guys came out in force. So excited to jump right in.
Yeah. Always so many of these. I like this a lot. So let's begin with Eric, who asks, "Hey, Level Crew, I asked this of the Dark Inside gang, so I'll ask you. Tell me about your pets."
All the pets.
Yeah, Jolly, you have the most pets among us. I want to hear about your pets.
Okay, well, I have Sunshine and Turner. They are two parakeets. One of them is yellow and the other one is blue. And Turner is very sweet and cute and receptive to everybody, but Sunshine is unfortunately a rescue bird that doesn't like to be touched or it doesn't want anything to do with anybody, and they kind of flock together, so I can't really handle either of them. So they just sit in a cage and they go outside and hang out with the koi that are in my koi pond outside on the patio.
Do they recognize that each other exist?
Yeah, like the birds look down at the fish, and I don't know if the fish really notice the birds because they're so high up, but yeah, like...
Yeah,
that's a thing. So, and the birds actually like will go to the bottom and look at the fish, and they'll get like upset and they'll start cheeping if somebody puts their hand in there. Like if my dad's like doing something in the pond, the parakeets will get upset because that's their fish and you're not supposed to mess with their fish. So yeah, we have a koi pond and there's koi in there. And we also have Fiara, who is my cockatiel. Fiara, it was also kind of like a rescue bird. Last December, my dad was going for a walk and there was a cockatiel that was in the hollow of a tree trying to make a nest, and it was cold. So my dad whistled to it and it just like flew over to his shoulder and didn't leave. And then when I got home, then suddenly it attached to me and it didn't want to go anywhere. So it spent the night on a perch in my room, and then I got a cage, and Fiara's been my bird ever since. And she's very grumpy, but she's also very, very cuddly and sweet. So a lot of my parents and then other people who have known me for a long time are like, "It's you. It's really you. This bird is your familiar. It's you in bird form."
Oh, that's
'cause like, you know, Fiara will be like, you know, "No, I hate you. Get away from me." And I post videos of this on my Instagram. So like you can see the violent Fiara. Like when Fiara is being quote unquote violent, she will just like make loud noises at you and like quote, you know, kind of peck at you, but she's not actually biting you. She's just trying to scare you. And then she'll like, you know, put her wings out like, "I'm a badass. I'm a hawk," you know, and it's like, "Okay, whatever, bird." You know, and then when she's cuddly, like she will get super, super, like she'll put her beak on my lips and, you know, like give me kisses and try to preen me and like cuddle up into my hand. And, you know, she's very, very cuddly when she's not trying to kill anybody. And then I also have Indra, who is a panther gecko, and he's super cool. He actually got sick here recently, but he is recovering. I am glad to say I've had him for 4 years now and he's very chill. He, when you pet him, he, or at least when I pet him, he curls his tail around my finger to kind of hug me back. And he's very cool. And he, like, a lot of times if I'm painting or something, I'll have him on one shoulder and I'll have Fiara on the other shoulder, and they're just kind of hanging out with me. So, and then finally, I also have Puffles, which is my parents' dog. Her actual name is Casey, but I call her Puffles because she is a schnoodle, a half poodle, half schnauzer, and she has puffly hair. She looks like a cotton puff, and so she's Puffles. And everybody who I tell about Puffles or show Puffles to is just like, that is a puffly dog.
Yeah.
Like, it is a puffly dog.
The name fits.
Yes, it does. So that's the slew of animals that you will see on my Instagram randomly as I post pictures of them.
The menagerie that you run. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis, you have two cats, right?
Yes, indeed I do. The aptly named Sherlock and Watson, which led to our Wi-Fi network being named 22 or whatever it is, 221B Baker Street.
Yeah.
I want to mangle that. Whatever that address actually is. But they're brothers. We got them from the same litter. And that, I think, was the best decision ever. For Christmas, I grew up with dogs my entire life. And was just, you know, dead set against cats. So for Christmas one year, I got Jen permission to get cats. and so we went out and got them shortly after. We only went out for one, but getting two is a great decision because they have never ripped up a piece of furniture or anything like that. Like, they are, as cats go, the best behaved little animals that I've ever seen. Their personalities are really funny in that they are polar opposites and they flip depending on how many people are in the house.
they like trade places?
Yeah, well, almost. Like, so Watson is just this, you know, almost a dog, snuggly little attention whore, loves to be up in our business and hang out with
Watson's
us.
Watson's the brown tabby, right?
Watson is gray. Sherlock is orange.
Okay, yes, there we go. Okay.
Yeah. And then Sherlock is very aloof and kind of wants to be off doing his own thing. And so kind of almost avoids us. Like, we don't see him around a lot. The second guests come over, Watson disappears and Sherlock comes out to welcome his new overlords. Like, it's just the life of the
party. Take me with you, please.
Get me out of here. So that's their one big quirk. But other than that, they're super good cats. And I feel bad because they've definitely gotten a demotion since kids have come around.
Oh.
And they know it. Like, they're mournful about it from time to time.
We have each other. Don't worry. Don't worry, buddy.
Well, at least you don't have a menagerie. I mean, if you had a menagerie and then you had kids, that was my sister's boat. Because she has two kids, but she has a ton of birds and, you know, she's got dogs. And so as they die off, she's just not getting any more, you know.
Sad. Yeah. Oh. And then, Cole, you kind of have bird feeders and stuff, right?
Yeah. That's like being pet adjacent and stuff. Like, I have animals that exist in my neighborhood, who I happen to watch. My mourning doves went away. They're not here anymore. But there are a couple of mated pairs of finches and stuff. But I do not actually have my own animals because I can barely take care of myself. So. But,
well, it's just kind of like being an aunt or something, you know, like you can just say, hey, look, that's a really cool animal. How awesome.
Exactly.
Spend a little minute with them and then be like, okay, go back to whatever you were doing. I don't have to deal with you anymore.
I was talking about this in the Slack, but it's like, I want to be a dog uncle because people bring their dogs into work and it's like, oh, look at this dog. I'm going to get down. I'm going to scratch those ears. Yes. Who's a good boy? I think it's you. And that's well and good. But if I had a dog, I would have no idea what to do with it.
Well, the second you have to walk a dog at like 3 a.m. or in the winter, you know,
it gets really rough. Yeah. No, but if they're in the office and I can be like, oh, I think you're a good boy. Let me find out. Let me check. Open up my phone. Yes, it's you. that's good. Jello, what does Derek say?
Derek says, what was it that inspired you to look at games with a critical eye? Was there a specific game that really spoke to you, a change in attitude, or some other factor that led to spending countless hours dissecting and discussing video games every week? He's really trying to get into our heads, isn't he?
I know, right? I think he's trying to build a profile or something.
Break out the couch.
The most pertinent person this should go to is Cole, of course.
Oh, I mean, it's just two things. I like talking and I like video games. No, I mean, I don't know. I've always liked video games. I had a lot of stories and I like thinking about video games as though they were, you know, something like books or movies, even though they're not, and they ought not try to be the same things. It is still one of those. And then the whole podcasting thing lends to that. Like, I didn't connect the two until I actually found out there was such a thing as video game podcasts when I was working that very boring job in college and listened to it. It's like, oh, I could totally do this.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's the right way to go, I think. How about you guys? Like, Dennis, I kind of dragged you along, but what made you stick around?
Yeah, I mean, that was a very natural outlet once I got the invite. I think for me, it probably goes way, way back to, you know, when I was a kid, my mom and dad were dead set that I wasn't going to have video game consoles and it wasn't going to be a thing, which of course meant I was completely fixated on them. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, every chance I got, every time I was over at a friend's house, like it was all about what video games we could play and that sort of thing. And I think there's a large part of that just in some form stuck with me. And when I realized like, oh, hey, there is a lot of depth and merit here that aren't on the surface, I just kind of gravitated towards that to justify something that had been very, you know, that I'd had to defend all my life, or had touted as something I shouldn't be into all my life. Mm-hmm. You know, all my life up through like, you know, age 8. So I think that's probably where it started. And then just having the right friends around it and who could have those discussions and really dig into the meat and just see how much was there, mm-hmm. Made it really easy to just get deeper and deeper into it.
Yeah.
So you play a non-trivial role in that, Cole.
Oh, cool.
Woo!
Jala, how about you?
I have opinions! Oh, no.
Just ask the
really
tables.
It's more like I've always been very sociable, and I talk to people about stuff, and if I like things, I talk about them. And then, you know, I mean, Cole, you fucking know about this, because, you know, since the beginning of WAF, I was there, mm-hmm. writing mails to you and Gary, talking about things, responding to stuff that you said, and giving you my opinions, because I had stuff to say. So, and then talking about other stuff too, of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then at the one point or another, then I was like, hey, Dennis, damn it, you need a woman on the podcast. And then Dennis is like, hey, well, since I can't be there, you do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. And that's how that happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, like I am actually, as bouncy and weird as I am, I'm also extremely analytical. So I like to, dissect things quite a bit as well. I don't always do a great job of it here, but you know, it's a thing I do. Mm-hmm. If you talk to me one-on-one, I will probably have a lot more to say and it'll be like more engaging, but yeah. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
That's what. Yeah.
Yep. Good question. Let's mm-hmm. see. Dennis, what does Allison ask?
Allison asks if we have had much experience yet with VR gaming. She's had her PSVR headset since launch and has been very impressed with it so far.
I
think we've had a little bit of VR chat. I don't know how much experience we had with systems at that point.
I tried an Oculus once at PAX and that was the extent of it. And I got dizzy and that's all.
Yeah. I wore one at PRGE about 4 years ago, I think 3 years ago, something like that. And I felt incredibly anxious that somebody was standing right behind me, probably. Like, my hair was standing up on my neck. It was Minecraft, and, like, that whole thing about free look doesn't really work for me that well. And it was a very low-resolution one. It was, like, Dev Kit 1 or 2, something like that. Whichever one wasn't HD. It wasn't the best thing. There was a, like, a VR lounge kind of thing going on at the Retro Games Expo this year, but I was not able to get into it.
Really?
Well,
for
I didn't
Retro Games.
Yeah, it was kind of strange actually. But it was just like a little room off to the side and there was a big line for it, and it's like, I'm not going to wait in line to get impetigo. But they had like Vives and stuff, and I'm really curious about the Vive, but you know, just so expensive to get into it and all that.
Yeah. And that's kind of why, that's where I sit. Like, I'm curious about it. I'm definitely not opposed to trying it again, even though I had, you know, vertigo or whatever. But it's expensive to drop down that much money and then be like, you know what? I'm not really into this. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Dennis, I think of us, you're probably the most gung-ho about 3D type stuff. Have you actually had a chance to try stuff out?
I have once. So I checked out an Oculus Rift just at one demo day for a company that happened to have it set up. And it was kind of like a little a flight sim kind of game, but it wasn't free look. Like your head was the joystick, essentially. So like if you wanted to fly up, you looked up. And if you wanted to fly down, you looked down.
Oh, God.
But the camera remained pretty fixed behind you. Yeah, so it was weird. But I liked it, and I didn't have any of the trouble with motion sickness or disorientation that you know a lot of people have talked about. I will also use this opportunity to shoehorn in the fact that I have been predicting that the PSVR would be a big success for a long time now, and it seems to be finding purchase. So I can't quite justify paying the equivalent of a second PS4 for it yet. Maybe I can use Craigslist to prey on someone who bought it and had trouble with like stomach stuff.
Don't use the words Craigslist and prey in the same sentence, please.
That's probably a poor choice. Yes, I apologize. So yeah, but for all my excitement and for all my confidence that it will be a thing, capital T, I have relatively limited experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious about it, but. You know, who knows? I think PSVR would be probably the one they get into, but I don't know. Just like I don't feel like taking part in a format war.
Yeah. Maybe wait for that to shake out. By the time it shakes out, there's going to be a new generation around, and then it's all just going to happen again. So
yeah.
God knows when the right time to get into this is.
I'm not assured to make
the prices will drop on the old ones by then. So.
They sure will. If I'm not assured I'm going to make the right choice, I'm not going to make a choice at all. I don't know how many times I have to say this before these people will get it through their heads. Mm-hmm. Just meet me halfway for fuck's sake. Steven writes, who is Zoodog? Man, who isn't Zoodog, buddy? Jala, what does Sam say?
Sam says, are there any games that went mostly unnoticed by the video game enthusiast media, but were important to you and the people you personally play games with?
This is my go-to answer for this, but God Hand was mostly ignored by media, but I love it. It's so good. We played.
I bought and played that because of WoF, and it is some prime game right there.
Yeah, but it's super good. It was shit on by critics. It's kind of a cult hit now. Like people who know about Platinum and stuff like it. And I think that just like our community is really like receptive to that now. So that is a big one. That's pretty important to me. Even though I'm terrible at it, like I don't have any illusions. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm just going to pull out my dead horse and say that Metrico is vastly underrated. And I'm furious that they have a PS4 port of it. I have no idea what it's like or how much they changed it, but that is a game that is insanely quirky and just so much fun and has it's that weird thing where I don't know that the developers intentionally put a lot of depth and meaning into it. But I pulled a lot of depth and meaning out of it, just in terms of the game as a statement on, you know, information versus knowledge versus wisdom. Mm-hmm. Like I took it very much in that direction. And in my mind, like it there's a lot there that I just really love in that theme. It kind of got shit on by critics and it never really found a foot to stand on. Yeah. But I love that bad boy.
I'm sure the PS4 port, it just kind of pops up little dialogue boxes every once in a while. Are you looking at something blue right now? Yes or no?
Yeah, and then you just have to, no. Yeah, it's neutered to say the least.
Yeah. Jala, how about you?
I will say Abyss Odyssey, because that's a weirdo game that like not a lot of people I know paid attention to. And then I mentioned it and then people bought it and then we played it and then everybody liked it. So damn it. Nice. It's a good game. You should play that game. It's great.
Yeah.
The end.
Frequently on sale too, like it's not, yes. Like it's unavailable or anything,
but it's one that I do recommend that you play with a person. It's a lot easier to get into when you've got somebody else to co-op it with, so yeah. It's one of those that you need a buddy, but it's only two player, so it's not gonna be that hard. It's not like I will never ever beat Gauntlet, because I don't ever have four people who can consistently game to finish Gauntlet with me.
Yeah.
So I can never finish Gauntlet, even though I really want to. So
yeah. Let's see, Dennis, how about Lance?
Lance says, why don't you guys talk about Wing Commander more?
Because I don't know anything about it.
I was more of an X-Wing TIE Fighter kid myself.
Ah, you stole my line.
Well, I mean, is that your line or is it your experience? Like, we just...
I was literally going to say the same thing.
Yeah. If I was about 5 years older, I probably would have, at the time that those were, if I was 5 years older in 1994, I'd be my brother. Yeah, I think that it would have been that I would have been more likely to dive into that. As it stood, I got into X-Wing and TIE Fighter pretty late. I just don't have the background on the mainline Wing Commander series.
I like that the dragon from the Neverending Story apparently makes an appearance as a character.
What?
Like this Wookiee knockoff guy.
Oh, it's like a Falco kind of dude. Yeah.
Falcor. Yeah, I'll post the image that I'm looking at into the Slack.
Yeah,
and it's interesting.
Jala, any experience at all with like PC flight sim kind of stuff like that?
No. I didn't even get into PC stuff at all until like Morrowind, and then I was only playing Morrowind, and then after that, I didn't play anything but Guild Wars for a long time, and then I only got onto Steam. You know, I don't know when. My sister dragged me into it in 2000. Oh, I don't know. You have to look at my profile and figure out how long ago I joined Steam. I'll tell you. Anyway, sometime. And that's when I started doing other gaming on my PC. But I did not, until that point, really do so. Because I honestly did not have a very good computer up until more recent years. So yeah. I could not do the gaming on the PC.
Yeah. Let's see here. Going to pick up with Roop, who writes, did you like Mobius and or the updated, and updated is in quotes there, the updated version of Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Fathers? Mobius is always sitting on my wish list. It never drops down to a point where I'm comfortable getting it, at least getting it and then knowing I'm going to sit on it for a couple of years before I finally crack it open. I was curious about the Gabriel Knight Sins of the Fathers remake, but like the original is still incredibly playable. It looks very good. And for fuck's sake, you have Tim Curry and Mark Hamill as the VO artists, as opposed to kind of like sound alikes. Like Sins of the Fathers is a fucking masterpiece, and it kind of always will be. I don't see the need for any kind of remake. So I never like chased it down because I knew it would just kind of piss me off. Mobius is the new game by Jane Jensen, the designer behind Gabriel Knight. Yeah,
I can't comment because I have no reference for either.
Yeah,
yeah, I haven't played either.
Yeah,
either.
I think that you can probably pick up the original on Jaws pretty cheap right now because I think some Halloween sales are still in effect. Cool. Let's see, Jala, what does Brandon ask?
Brandon asks, inspired by an old episode of Advice Hot Dog, appetizer or dessert? Assume you are having dinner and can only have one. Oh, dessert, damn it. I'm not a monster.
Oh, no. Coming out swinging. God, I miss Advice Hot Dog. So I'm not a monster. Do you have an answer to that question that is not an attack on appetizer people?
Well, here, let me explain something about my love of dessert. All right. When I was little, I would have my tray of food and I would have my dessert sitting all together, and I would eat around my plate and I would eat the dessert with my food to ensure that I had room for the dessert. Mm. And my mom and dad were like, well, as long as you eat all your food, that's cool. So I would make sure that I got my damn dessert in.
Yeah.
So the end.
Dennis, I'm curious about you.
I'm gonna fall on Jala's side. I would have dessert 100 times, and I would have
dinner. Are you kidding me?
As well, yeah. I recently discovered this about myself. Like other people talk about something being too sweet for them,
mm-hmm.
and I guess I've never found that threshold for me.
Oh,
I literally had the conversation where I was like, what do you mean when you say it's too sweet for you? And they're just like, it makes my teeth feel fuzzy. Like it's just too rich. Like I feel like I have to put it down. I'm like, I've literally, like, in all earnesty, not joking at all, I've never experienced that.
Huh?
Well, so I have that happen, and I don't typically indulge in sweet things, and that's something else I should say. I usually cook everything at home, and I usually, you know, like, don't indulge on, you know, like, decadent desserts or anything. So, like, if I go out to eat, I'm gonna have a damn dessert, because I don't eat them at home. I don't eat candy. I don't eat any of that crap. So, like,
yeah,
if I'm going out, well, I'm gonna get the good stuff.
Oh gosh.
All right, Cole, this is your appetizer Alamo. Fire away.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, gosh, they're at the gates. Oh, no. So to a personal preference standpoint, I've always been more of a savory person than a sweet person. Things are definitely too sweet for me. I probably have ice cream about, let's say, 3 times a year. Maybe once when family comes into town, and then, like, I will get a pint at the grocery store of, like, mocha chip, like the Grater's mocha chip, and I will just kind of, like, eat a spoonful of that every couple of nights for a week, and then it'll be done. As for appetizers, again, that is something, I would rather eat something kind of along the lines of a potato skin, or like an appetizer nacho is always very good. But here's my thing in favor of appetizers. Appetizers are meant for sharing. Okay. If I'm out with people, that is a social, that is a social experience. Okay. And
well,
Can I make my case, please?
Let the man finish.
Yeah. It is amazing when somebody says, I feel like having onion tanglers or something like that. And somebody else says, you know what? I want some mozzarella sticks. Well, let's get both of those. And then that's for the table. Like, that's for everybody. And then we're going to have that. Everybody can have a little bit of something. It's like ersatz tapas, you know, and then the main meal comes, and then you're not there for 5 minutes while they cook your lava cake, or for 25 minutes while they cook your lava cake.
So I was going to say, though, for first off, you know, just get tapas. So you already had that. Second off, with dessert, I will usually split my dessert. I'll be like, well, you get that one, and I'll get this one. They both sound really good. We'll cut them in half, and we just share.
I was on Jala's side, and now I realize that there are three sides, and I'm definitely not on the side. You do not touch my dessert.
Yeah, like, oh gosh, anything cut in half. No, I can't handle it. Unless I'm cutting a sandwich in half for myself. like the cut in half is fine if you're saving it for yourself or later. The cut in half as a transaction, no, can't do it. Mm-mm. Won't do it.
Well, also, you have to understand too that I'm vegetarian. A lot of people that I hang out with are not. So, like, if we get an appetizer, there's like maybe one thing in there that I'm going to eat.
Yeah,
there is one thing.
Bacon
is
usually okay.
So, like,
that's an extenuating circumstance. I'm not judging that part of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Jolly, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, cool.
Was I supposed to come back with a scathing comment and be like, I hate you? I mean, I can, if you really want. I'm not going to, like, you know, go flip tables over desserts.
I recognize they can all be shared. I feel like the appetizer, everybody's there, everybody's hungry. It is a modular creation. It's almost always bad for you, so nobody wants to have an awful lot, so you just get it, and then it's spread around.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Wow, that was a lot longer. Let's go into overtime here, because we've only done like 5 questions.
I know. Sorry, these always get such great response, and then I swear, one of these weeks we're just going to do a level that is just catching up on all the questions.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna drop all these into the air table, and we'll see what we have. Jala, what does Paul ask?
Paul asks, what are some games you think had the most interesting art style, and why? Are there any games you found yourself playing for the visuals, even if you didn't really like the gameplay?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Jala, as the person who's most art attuned here, I would like to hear from you if you have an answer.
I get games because of their art pretty frequently, but the thing is that I don't typically find them to be intolerable to play. Like, Abyss Odyssey in part sold me because I like the Art Nouveau style of the game. Also, what was that one? Doodle Ballpoint Universe? Ballpoint Universe is what it was. The one with all the doodle art.
Oh, yeah. Weird platformer thing, yeah.
Yeah, that was done on, like, the little scratch paper or whatever. That one's really cute, and I like that one a lot, too. Although, like, the gameplay was meh, but I played it a little bit just because, again, I like the visuals. And let's see. That rememoried game, that was weird visuals, and I bought that one and played, you know, like a good chunk of that until that weird labyrinth part that I okay, well, I played that because the visuals looked interesting to me. So I very, very frequently end up trying things for that. I can't really say, okay, this is the most interesting art style, because I bet the moment I say that, I'm going to think of like six other ones I think are better. Mm-hmm. But I've already called out several different games, you know, so far. So yeah, like I'm not going to pick art over the gameplay. Like if the game makes me want to flip tables, I'm not going to play it other than VLR, which I don't know why I suffered through it, but I did it anyway. That was the one exception to this rule about the table flipping. But the art alone is not going to carry it. And it wasn't that with VLR. There were parts of the story, to be all honest and stuff, mm-hmm. that, you know, I liked enough to try to trudge through that.
That game will never not be on trial.
No.
Huh.
Objection.
Let's see here. Looking at the Dennis, how about you? You have a game whose art style particularly tickles your art bone?
Yeah, I'm gonna answer Paul and Nick's question, who's next in line, and he asked about favorite video game music. And I'm gonna answer those in one fell swoop, which is Katamari Damacy. So I love just the entirety of that game from a visual perspective, and then especially from a music perspective. And I find myself just kind of muttering that na 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 to myself at all hours.
Yeah.
I don't even realize I'm doing it. And so like, what tune am I humming? Oh, it's Katamari Damacy again. I wouldn't go as far as to say like I don't like the gameplay there. It just never tickled me the way that it really got a hold of other people. But just from the art direction, the music, and the whole ethos of that game, I'm 100% yes behind.
Yeah. No, Katamari is a very good answer for both of those. I love that flat pastel kind of style. Mm-hmm. I'll do mine real quick. Like Jala, if I say anything is the most, then I will immediately turn around and be like, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, I'll hem and haw and tinker with that all day. Like, but what about Eco? Because I'm in kind of a spooky mood right now, I really love the look of Lone Survivor. Like, yeah, it's low pixel count, retro style thing, but I just love the look of filtered chunky pixel kind of aesthetics. Like, just they're doing an awful lot on top of just, you know, the idea that like, hey, a monster with not very much detail kind of leaves a little bit more to the imagination, looks a little bit more uncanny. Like, all of that stuff is really cool. In addition to kind of the atmospheric effects that are overlaid on top of it, I think that it accomplishes a lot with very little. And that soundtrack is pretty good too.
Hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. So why don't we roll right into to Nikolai's? Not Nikolai, Nick. Dennis. What is Nick's question?
So his is, what is your favorite video game soundtrack and why? And what is your favorite individual song from a game and why? And I think you just got that from me.
Yeah. Again, it's hard to say most. The one I've probably listened to the most is Machinarium, in terms of like soundtrack. But yeah, just because it's most pleasing to listen to. Like, it fades in the background. It accomplishes most of what I want to accomplish. Like, in terms of like non-ambient kind of stuff, like maybe like Chrono Cross. I think Chrono Cross does a very good job with that. As far as favorite songs go, because it's top of mind right now, one of the like best original songs used thematically within a game is Build That Wall from Bastion, or Dig the Hole, whichever one it is. You know, the song from Bastion. I dig my hole, you build a wall. Like that's the one. So good. And it fits so much, and just kind of like it feels like it is part of that world, and it tells a story about the two countries in that game. Yeah, amazing. Mm-hmm. Jala, how about you?
Woo! Okay, well, lately I have been listening to the Robot Roller Derby Disco Dodgeball soundtrack in part of my running playlist. So I also have a whole bunch of boss battle music and just like JRPG fight music in there, because, you know, like that is something that makes me feel excited and like I want to go do stuff. And, you know, usually I'm if I'm not literally running, I'm running around doing things and I'm very busy. So like stuff that has high energy for me is usually the kind of thing that I prefer to listen to. If I do want to just chill and relax, I do have a slew of just, I don't know, soundtracks from various games from, let me see, like I like Planescape Torment's music. I listen to that various times. I don't know, like stuff, things. I can't really like call out individual ones or individual songs that I really, really dig because, you know, it depends on what my mood is at the time. I mean, I really do. Like my music library is about 30,000 songs and I have everything from opera and classical and, you know, jazz and old school Americana stuff to different music from around the globe and hip hop and R&B and metal and whatever. So like I listen to a bunch of different types of things depending upon how I feel at the time. So, you know, any number of things. Sorry, I have a very, very lame-o answer there.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It's a hard question to answer. Like, I don't know, especially when you have everything. This is my standing recommendation that if anybody has ever used the Humble Bundle service, go and check their kind of like library function because you probably have a shitload of game soundtracks that you're sitting on top of that you don't even realize.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Like you don't even know. Yeah, so I think that's everything. We got through a pitiful amount, but it's been like a half hour since we started this, even more. And we, you know, we need to go to bed sometime tonight. We're going to save all these. Oh, go ahead, Jala.
I have to answer one very quickly. And
okie doke.
That's it. Okay. Jason's question, what's your favorite non-duck feed podcast? I have to say my current favorite non-duck feed podcast is My Dad Wrote a Porno.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. The end.
Yeah.
And I'll do a shout out as well just because I can. Franz asked any chance of restarting the dadding because I recently saw on Facebook that he is going to be a dad. So congratulations.
Oh, cool. Congratulations, Sean. Mm.
Yeah, that is an incredible
thing. I was taking a drink.
Thing.
Congrats.
And yeah, I had a ton to say about being a dad before my kid was actually born. And then you have zero time.
and then you were too busy being a dad.
You're not nearly as wise as you think after the fact. So maybe once my kids are successful adults, I'll be able to feel like I have any right to comment on it.
Right.
Anything before that was just naivete and fun times writing. But
yeah,
we'll see. I'm not going to close any doors on it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to squirrel away all of the non-answered questions here. We may come back to those at a later time. Trust me, if we didn't get to it, it's just because of time. But if you want to participate in these, whenever they go live, you can follow facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, just like that. And then those questions go up on, Tuesday afternoons, thanks to, Dennis and Jala.
Yeah. And thank you guys seriously for coming out in force.
Yeah. So many responses. Thank you.
The Grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we can talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Do we have any volunteers to go first?
Okay.
All right, Jala, go ahead.
All right, so I did a co-op thing. I played more Portal 2 with Greg, and we are, I want to say, on the 6th out of 8 of the gel puzzles on the very last part of the puzzle co-op, or the Portal co-op. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's the one that I always get stuck on, and it's like, I know what needs to happen, but I don't know how to make it happen. Mm. And it's that one little missing piece, and so I was like, okay, whenever we play this next time, if I don't get it in, you know, like, the first or second, you know, try, like, if it's like 5 or 10 minutes and I still haven't gotten it, we're going to look it up. We haven't had to look up anything, but mm-hmm. there's this one puzzle and I'm just like, I don't remember the other two puzzles being as bad. This is just the one puzzle that I always get hung up on. So yeah.
No shame in giving the car a push if you run out of gas.
Yeah. So we'll see. Like last time I said that, and then like, as soon as I loaded it up the next time, I was like, oh, I know what to do. And I got it immediately. So I don't know, maybe miracles will happen. other than that, also, I finished playing Resident Evil 6 with Sam. It is done.
Mm.
Woohoo!
So yay, finished it, and he liked it. Just like for people who, you know, were curious, he does like the game. It is ridiculous and silly, but it is also a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, Cole, if you want to co-op it.
Yeah.
I'm now clear. I finished it again.
Yes. I need to get on that before you before you start the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. The next cycle, the never ending cycle of samsara, also known as six. Okay. So I have a question for you about Steins Gate because I have not played anymore because you were like, hey, you can just start from whatever the chapter is. I have no idea how to do that. Like I don't see an option or a way to start back over from like wherever you last picked up or from like a point. I have to start entirely from the beginning again from what I can see. So
that's weird.
Apparently this is news to you. So
yeah.
I don't know.
I was totally able to select the chapter that I came in on. So I would actually have to like pick up the game and pull it up and open it. But the PS Vita is in a different room.
Well, I don't know. You can get back to me on that maybe.
Yeah.
Cause I literally have not played anymore because I'm like, I am not going to go through everything again if I don't have to.
Right.
So I just kind of like boycotted that for a while just to see, you know, I mean, if I have to, then that's fine. But if I don't have to, I'm not going to do it. So, all right. So because I haven't been playing that, what have I been playing other than my usual co-op? I've been playing Child of Light because, you know, I said I was going to play Persona 4. So I played Child of Light. So,
makes sense.
But that's because I didn't want to start Persona 4 while I still had Steins Gate floating around. I want to finish Steins Gate, but Child of Light is like a real short kind of game. So I mean, like, it's like maybe 13 hours and I'm like over halfway through with it now. So, you know, by the time I figure out, you know, what's going on with Steins Gate and finish that and finish Child of Light, then I can move on to like the very large and invested game.
Yeah. So Child of Light, this is a game developed by Ubisoft, kind of done in the same art engine that the more recent Rayman games have been done in, and also Valiant Hearts, that game, that adventure game about the First World War. Like, it's a really, I'll let you describe it, but it looks really neat.
So I was about to say, thank you, Cole. I'll just be like Vanna White and I'll let you talk.
I'm so sorry. I wanted to get that bit of context in here so people, because like it feels like it came out a couple years ago and then it kind of not died on the table, but like people played it, held it like, oh, this is kind of like Dark Souls, and then it fell away. I'm very happy to be able to revisit this.
Wow, that's the first time I've heard that. And I haven't been specifically paying attention to this game, but interesting.
Well, okay. So I bought it due to the beautiful art and sound design. Hey, that relates to that multiplayer question. So yes, that was one of the things that caught my attention about this game, which is why I bought it and why I'm playing it. I have to say that a lot of care is given to the movement of the characters' bodies. They look and, you know, they move around very naturally. It feels like they paid a lot of attention to how a little girl moves around, and Aurora, which is the main character's hair, is very flowy and stylistic. And also, like, if you go into a dark area, it looks like flame. She's redheaded, so it'll look like flame, and it you know, looks like it's on fire, which is pretty cool. So you can still tell where you are, which is really neat. And basically, this game is about a little girl who, I guess, dies or something, and her dad's heartbroken, and then she's, like, in the world of shadows or dreams or some crap like that, and she's trying to get back home because her dad has fallen ill from heart grief, you know, heartbreak and grief and whatnot, and so that's basically the principal idea of the story. Now, the story, I'll say, is very, very simple, and it's very uninteresting, at least to me. It is not really much by way of character development, but the world, the art, and the sound design are so charming that it's a nice, relaxing RPG to play in bed. It is a sort of platformer / exploration game, and then when you have fights, it's a turn-based RPG. Everybody speaks in loose rhyme, which is kind of weird because they're loose rhymes, but they're not very good insofar as like poetry. So it's just like, it kind of irritates me because I used to write poetry quite a bit. And so it just bothers me when I read it. it's just a quirk of the narrative, though. There is one character that is a jester, and every time she has the opportunity to rhyme, she uses a synonym that doesn't rhyme, and then somebody corrects her and tells her what word she should have used so that it would rhyme. So, you know, that's a thing that happens in this game. You also have a little firefly buddy that can fly around that you can control with the right stick that can illuminate the screen if you're like you're in a dark area, and during battle can slow down enemies and, you know, on the little action timeline at the bottom. And he can also fly around and pick up items or open chests and stuff. So that's kind of useful, although he doesn't have, he's just like a little assistant guy that floats around. Let's see, other things. There's a kind of materia system where you can craft oculi, which are just types and different grades of gems, like, you know, sapphire, ruby, and emerald, which you combine together to make a diamond, because that makes sense.
Yeah, that's how that works.
Yeah, the colors and cancel out.
Right. And then you insert them on your weapon, armor, and accessory, so you have three different slots per character. And they give you different stat boosts, effects, and et cetera. They don't have a leveling system like Materia does, so I guess that's a little bit misleading, but they are kind of like a booster thing that you can swap around between characters as you please. There's typical skill trees and things like that for the different characters, and it is my impression that some of the extra characters that I have in this game to play are from the DLC, and that you cannot get all of the 50 million characters that I've picked up so far other than from using the DLC. But the guys that I prefer to fight as in the turn-based RPG part are two of the people that are from the DLC. And basically, on the turn-based like fight scenes, you can have two people on the screen at once, and you have, like right now, I think I have 5 or 6 people in my party total. So you can toggle between people, you know, and tap people out and, you know, switch them out during the battle without any penalty. Like if it was the golem's turn and then you want to switch out for, you know, the jester person, then you can do that. And then the jester person would have an action instantaneously because, you know, that's just how they roll. The fights are not very difficult at all. I have not had to heal once at all. And I'm playing it on normal mode, but according to listener David Petroco, it's not worth playing on hard mode because it just extends the length of the fights. It doesn't really do it. So it's not like, it's like I said, I mean, this is like a kind of relaxing game. If you want to be challenged or you want to have an in-depth story, this is not the game for you. But if you want something that's kind of lighthearted, relaxed, and, you know, whimsical, this would be something to play.
So that logic would kind of recommend playing on easy mode, if there is such a thing.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You don't want to prolong the fights any longer than they already are. It's fine. There isn't an easy mode that I saw. You might be able to unlock it after you finish playing it the first time. So I just played on normal. Yeah. I'm currently on chapter 6 of 10. So I'm about halfway through the game right at the moment.
Although the way video game chapters work, like chapter 6 of 10 is really more like 80 to 90% of the way.
I was going to say the other way, like the intro chapters are always really short, and then they just kind of like, okay, we have to fit a bunch in here.
Well, I guess it's how much do you consider a narrative game versus like an action game? Because I feel like action games, like or any kind of action games is the right word for it. That the ending seems to, like, you know, move, you're chopping through areas way, way quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is definitely not like a story rich video game. So
yeah, as you said.
Yeah. So that being the case, I mean, like I think I'm pretty much about halfway through with it. Yeah. But I've enjoyed it. I can't really say anything too bad about it just because, like, yeah, it's easy. And yeah, there's not a lot of, you know, story elements, you know, there's not very many story elements there, but the sound design sticks with me. And I kind of have been humming the tunes from the game, kind of like how Dennis was talking about. And, you know, I enjoy the artwork. And I do want to see the game to completion. Like, it doesn't bore me or anything, because I get bored very easily, and this has not bored me. So that's good news. So yeah, like overall, I therefore think that I like it, but I'm not like super excited about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's good. I would recommend it to someone who wants to have like a nice relaxing time, but I'm not going to be like, this is the best game I've played in so long. So yeah. Any questions?
No, I'm happy to hear that it looks as good in motion as the style would have you hopefully believe. You know, that like style and animation are not always in line. I like that engine a lot. I think Ubisoft has done some really good stuff. I don't know if that has like made the transition over to like modern day stuff though.
I don't know.
Like if they're still developing anything with it.
Yeah, I wonder. Was that on the PS4? Or was it just on Vita?
That was like in that twilight realm betwixt the two.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I know it's. Oh, go ahead.
Well, your description of the little like firefly character gave me visions of the star catcher role from Super Mario Galaxy. Like this kind of little sprite that's really for someone who's kind of watching but wants to participate a little bit could play. And I was going to say, hey, I wonder if this ever comes to PS4, if it's on PS4, which it looks like it is. Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah.
If you think it would ever be meaningful to have, like, you know, you can connect a second controller and a la Super Mario Galaxy, have someone kind of play along being the sprite. Like, would you ever see something like that working?
I don't know. Good question. Yeah.
It's a thought that came to mind for me.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Some mysteries will never be solved.
But I definitely, like, I am glad that I'm liking it because I wasn't sure when I got it. Because, you know, like, when I get something for the artwork or some other simple reason like that, you never really know how the gameplay is, to discuss Paul's point again. I'm glad that the gameplay is enough there that I am having a nice time just kind of relaxing with it. And I would definitely pick up another game of this sort if there was another kind of spiritual successor. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Nice. Is that all?
Yes.
Okay. Dennis, I'm going to throw it to you.
Yeah. So the big one that I've started playing, and this was actually 2 weeks ago now, so I'm well into it, was I started playing The Witness. And it was just a good sale price, and I snapped it up, and man, I've fallen into a deep, deep hole for this game, to the point where every window pane becomes a grid. Like it's like Tetris syndrome for The Witness. For anyone who's not familiar, it's a puzzle game. It's made by Jonathan Blow, the guy who did Braid, so dude knows how to make a puzzle game.
Ben Merkel, good game of the year.
Ben Merkel, game of the year. Yeah. I'm not surprised by him getting to that point. All the puzzles involve a grid in some way, and you're really just kind of tracing lines through that grid, following several different sets of rules. And I think more than anything else, the game is a study in just how adept the human mind is at picking up information that's being conveyed, even if that information is being conveyed in the most oblique, indirect way possible. Like, there is never a tutorial for The Witness. The puzzles get more and more complicated. But the symbols that make up the rules are completely obtuse. And, there's nothing inherent in them, save for some of the basic starting ones, that tells you, okay, this is how you're supposed to interact. But the way Jonathan has designed the game is like there's a very simple puzzle that could only have a few potential solutions in terms of like a few different ways you could trace the line. And so usually by just guessing at what the symbol might mean or by just pure experimentation, you can solve the first puzzle. And then from there, the second puzzle gets a little more complicated, but I was amazed at how quickly I kind of intuitively got the rule set that I was working with. So like, okay, this shape means that it will forgive one mistake in this pattern that I'm making. And so I can trace this line and make one mistake and it will, forgive that. Or, this shape means that there always has to be two of them together, or I always need to draw a line between them. Or I remember the review from Polygon, I believe by Justin McElroy, talked about it as kind of learning a language. It was just really interesting because it felt like I was getting insight into the way my own mind worked as I was picking up this language. Mm-hmm. And I was just very rapidly intuiting the intent that the puzzle designer had put into the puzzles. And he really pushes that way, way out to the edge. So, you know, there are symbols and information, everything on the grid itself and in the blocks the grid forms to inform your, you know, puzzle solving. But then a lot of it is environmental, and you kind of have to say, oh, well, you know, if I stand in front of the puzzle here, the tree casts a shadow on it that looks weird. And if I trace that shadow, oh, that's what solves the puzzle.
We're lucky that Ben isn't here because he would be flipping out. Alluding. I'm not flipping out. I'm just acknowledging that this is probably for the best that you're describing the actual mechanics of these puzzles.
Well, he's not here. Yeah. And I'm trying to do it in a way that would not ruin it for someone. You would recognize it when you solve the first puzzle of that sort, but I don't think it would ruin any of the working out.
Right.
But anyway, so there are all these indirect cues, and it just gets more and more and more oblique, like really, really far-fetched where, okay, well, maybe on this half of the board I'm supposed – and I'm making it up at this point, so this is not referencing a specific puzzle – but on this half of the board I'm supposed to follow a shadow, but then on this half of the board I'm supposed to make a certain shape. And as long as I can follow, nothing is telling you to do that. You're just kind of guessing at it. But again, I was just amazed at how quickly I picked it up. Just the fact there was intention put into it. And I think there's something just about the human mind that just locks on to any kind of intention or pattern and draws it out. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes that, you know, even when there's not a real pattern there, which we do in nature all the time. But it just really fascinating to play it that way. I will also say that this is like a dopamine dispensing game. Oh my God, it feels so good when you solve a puzzle. And I was trying to wrap my head around why, like, cause you know, there's a very satisfying like sound when you get it right, but that's not it. And I finally settled on the world presents itself as very static. Like you're on a gorgeous island. There's lots of fauna around. But the trees don't sway in the breeze. There's no animal life moving around. There is very little in the way of like particle debris. Like most games these days have some kind of like dust in the air or something like that. But this doesn't really have any of that. Everything is completely static. And it's not quite, you know, the pastel blocks of Katamari Damacy, like we mentioned before in the show. But it is kind of almost simplified, like one step towards abstracted.
Yeah.
And I can't use the word static enough. Mm-hmm. But when you solve a puzzle, that can cause something to move or happen in the world. And I think seeing that just feels so jarring because the island is so still for the most of the game, that is what makes it just incredibly fulfilling and satisfying. And literally to the like the first night that I played it, I probably stayed up till 2 a.m. solving puzzles. I could literally feel the dopamine hitting me. Like I'm not exaggerating. Like I would get the something would move. And I would just feel this like burst of good feels of adrenaline or whatever you want to call it hit me.
Yeah.
So that it's good at that. Like man, that feels really good. I will also say I'm not far enough in the game that if I hit a point of frustration, I can't just wander off to another section of the island.
Okay. I was going to ask if you hit any walls because you're describing the early, the early days of a game like this.
Yeah. And again, part of that is intentional because I don't want to spoil anything too great. I want to say that I've turned on probably 6 or 7 light beams.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how many total there are.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm getting pretty far, like just in terms of physical island to walk to. There aren't many areas left that I haven't gone through. But I've definitely hit some walls and places where I'm just like, okay, I see where I'm supposed to go, but I'm clearly missing something. Or this, okay, I can't quite figure out this set of rules. Or there's a symbol here that I haven't seen before, and I just kind of intuit there's got to be a tutorial area for this symbol.
Yeah.
And that I haven't found yet. And I can very easily just kind of wander off in a different direction and find something new to solve. And so the pace of actually solving puzzles has stayed pretty rapid for me. I worry about when I get to the end game, when I narrow myself down to the last one or two areas that I need to go through,
yeah,
and I don't have that option, if the game will get way more frustrating.
Yeah.
Because this is 100% a game that you sleep on and then come back to, you know, with the solution in your head, or that you go off and work something else out, and while you're doing that, your brain is kind of subconsciously figuring out the thing that you couldn't get before.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also there's like the world puzzles, like the meta environmental puzzle kind of things, which Jonathan Blow in his way says, oh, that's the actual part of this game. It's kind of like, it's kind of like the platformer part of Fez versus the like code breaking part of Fez.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. It feels pretty overt in that you kind of, you very quickly recognize, okay, this is the shape that denotes a start of a puzzle. Mm-hmm. And those just, you'll notice very naturally those show up in the world. And then you eventually find these obelisks that give you, kind of show you how many are nearby in any given direction. So it feels like he does a better job of signposting at least there than he did in Braid. Like, okay, here is what is what the secrets are to find and where generally you can find them. Mm. So I've liked that. I definitely see that as being something where it's infuriating to just go find the last few of them.
Yeah.
The first one that I found, and I imagine it's the first one that several people found, was super intriguing, because it was actually a reflection of something. So I was looking into the water and noticed that if I stood at a certain point, the reflection kind of lined up these different shapes to form kind of a grid, clicked on it, and of course it lights up and allows me to draw a line on it. And then that it like the, when you find one of those and trace it, it like lights up, these lights fly through the air into the obelisk. And I don't know if this was intentional or not, but I could see the obelisk in the reflection that I had solved the puzzle in, but I could not yet see it in the real world.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. And it might've just been just a glitch in the way that where I was in the geometry and how the computer was calculating the, you know, where the reflection would be in the obelisk was there the whole time. But it was one of those things where I was like, oh, what's that? Oh, it's not there. Well, it's definitely there in the water and where it looks like it should be. I'm not seeing it like that. That was just a super intriguing moment. Again, could have been a glitch, or maybe it actually, you know, there was something that worked that way, or I don't know what, but
yeah.
I doubt I will go through and solve every little secret puzzle, but right. I've definitely, you know, got a huge amount of love for this game that will carry me through to the end of the normal pieces at least.
Nice.
And I, the last thing I'll say is I had an interesting discussion on Slack with some people about just Jonathan Blow and the source material that he uses. Like most of the audio logs you find, or there are some video logs that you can find, are quotes from other works. And he reminds me of me when I wrote my very first like essay for school, in that I took paragraphs out of the book and just quoted them wholesale. I was like, well, you know, it's all relevant. It illustrates my point. So why wouldn't I just copy and paste the entire paragraph? And it feels very much like that, where he's got, you know, there's a 5-minute block of video or audio or something. And it's just, he likes the whole thing and it's all relevant to kind of the theme that he's playing out here. So why wouldn't I just paste that entire thing in? So yeah. On that front, it could probably do with a little bit of editing. And I find myself kind of wandering off and missing parts of it. Which I'm sure is not his intent, because I just get bored. But that's the one thing I would ask for is a change.
is for that not just to be like, hey, like if it just wasn't Jonathan Blow's Pinterest wall or like his Twitter feed. Yeah.
So that is that's the main new one I've been playing, and I feel like I've spilled a lot of verbal ink there. So you guys tell me if you got any questions on it.
No. I mean, I just, it's a game that I played a little bit of and then kind of bounced off of, just for whatever reason, the usual reasons why I start playing and then stop playing stuff. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of thing that I'm happy exists for people like Ben who really enjoy it, and sounds like you as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that I got it and played it and got what I needed out of it. And that was not, you know, beating it in its entirety or getting to a point where I, you know, could say I completed most of it, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I'm sure, Cole, you played this with a pad of paper and a pen, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and that is the final point I'll make on the game is that you play it as much on the paper in front of your monitor as you do on the monitor for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah, which I'm down for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. And is that all?
I played a little bit more of Divinity: Original Sin. We double checked because it was so difficult. Me and Evan B. But we were playing on the normal mode. The battles are just really, really difficult. And multiple times we've had multiple characters die or just kind of gotten through a battle by the skin of our teeth. And these aren't boss battles. These are just normal encounters out in the wild. And we've been at the same level as the enemies. So it doesn't feel like we've wandered off into something that's outside of our capabilities. It feels like the game is just balanced towards difficulty. That has made the combat super interesting and fun, and I'm glad we have resisted the temptation to revert to a quick save when things start going south.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had things go south to the point that there was only one party member left alive, and we might have to restart. But I think that has just encouraged us to be much more liberal with using the resources in our inventory. So it's gotten us over the too good to use syndrome that exists in most games of this type.
Yeah.
And it's just been lots of fun to try to puzzle out the combat together. And it feels like, if this was no brainer combat like Child of Light, it wouldn't be nearly as much fun to play co-op where I'm playing with him and going, oh shit, what do we do? Like, I can't believe I missed that. How do we fix that problem? Or like, I got knocked down because I didn't realize I was walking on ice and I slipped. And so now we're screwed. Like, is there any way you can keep me alive for a turn? Like, that it's made the co-op aspect of it that much more fun.
Yeah, we're actually like relying on each other for this.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. As opposed to a lot of co-op that I personally have done, which is like, well, two guns, we got this, more damage. we have them. We've split their attention. Good.
Yep. Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do mine here real quick, just because I don't know how much I have to say just yet. Sure. I can get the basics in. So I picked up World of Final Fantasy for the PlayStation Vita.
Oh, is this the chibi mm-hmm. one?
Yeah. It's the one where all of the kind of super deformed characters look like those shitty little Funko Pop vinyl figurines. and just kind of I say that dismissively, but it's like, how do you take something like the sprite designs from like Final Fantasy I and like bring those into something high def while still keeping those proportions? That's ultimately what they accomplish here with that, like, oh, here's Final Fantasy 1 through 4 but in 3D Yahtzee. Mm-hmm. I got it because I'm unpredictable and it is pressing on that Final Fantasy nostalgia button, because you are kind of going through and talking with and collecting and fighting with a whole bunch of old Final Fantasy kind of protagonists, but also because it is Final Fantasy Pokemon. Like, nice. it is fucking shameless the way that it goes. Like, you'll be going mm-hmm. and then here is a baby chocobo, or here's a tiny little golem monster, and then you have to fight them until they are down to a relatively weak point, and then instead of throwing a Pokeball, you try to imprison them. And then it's actually kind of cool. It's actually kind of cool because it's not just like, hey, we're going to have you fight for us. Your characters are still in the fight, but all of your dudes, your monsters, you can stack them on top of you as it goes. So when you fight as a stack, you combine your strengths and weaknesses, you combine your hit points and stuff, and then you have the option to either fight stacked or unstacked, where like unstacked you're all a little bit weaker, but it spreads your weaknesses out like that. And then so you're kind of like building this kind of amalgamated character and party of these amalgamated characters on these monsters that you are kind of like leveling up and getting their stuff. It's kind of like a weird little materia system almost.
Well, that's cool.
The extra wrinkle in that is your two main characters can go back and forth between being big or small. The small version is those little Funko Pop ones, the super deformed. The bigger ones are kind of like, oh, here's just like a Nomura-ass design, mm-hmm. Of kind of regular like Kingdom Hearts style proportions kind of thing. And it's a shame because for as much as I like the Pokemon style combat, like, hey, I'll capture and raise a Cactuar. Try and stop me. the unfortunate part is all of that stuff is pretty solid. You know, it's turn-based combat. It's active time battle to a point. And you can actually like fast forward it, and you can see like a little timeline of whose turns are approaching, like who's catching up. And like all of that stuff is pretty great. There's like shortcut buttons, and then you can dig into a menu. Like everything feels very conscientiously designed, up to but not including battles are still random, which is a bit of a bummer.
Huh.
So womp womp. But anyway, this is an obnoxious game, guys. So I went into this kind of not knowing anything about it, aside from just watching like a couple of like reveal trailers a couple years ago. I was like, oh, like, okay, Final Fantasy Pokemon, I'm going to get that and it's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that you were going to be part of, like, you were going to be playing as these two irascible twins who are transplants from another world. Would you be surprised if I told you that the male twin is kind of flighty and goofy, and that the female twin was very down to earth and chastised him a lot? Would that surprise you? Are you shocked? Is your hair standing on end?
Not at this point.
Would it surprise you if your emissary in this world, the person who's kind of like walking you through this, is some kind of shitty little talking fox monster who has a big puffy tail with a crown on the side of it, who has an annoying little speech impediment where they sometimes put the word in front of some of the words?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And if it's at one point when I was playing today, I walked into a dungeon, like this little shit fox jumps out and says, oh, this is a dungeon. Sometimes things are a little bit more dangerous. You're going to fight things that are much harder. And then I walked three steps and he came out again.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so it's like it's totally Kingdom Hearts out the ass. And like, I just want to go and like catch a Cactuar. Mm-hmm. When am I going to catch the Cactuar? Like, I don't care. You know, so I care about the, you're fighting against the, like, the behemoth empire that is taking over all these little kingdoms. Like, okay, give me that. Like, I will lead a rebel force by going around and collecting all of these old Final Fantasy characters. Great. I don't need the interdimensional interlopers and the shitty Navi stand-in. like, I hope that shit lets up, because it is fucking intolerable. The amount of time that I'm spending listening to this fucking weasel talk about nonsense.
Apes, the best part of Pokemon and the worst part of Zelda.
Well, yeah, I mean, or just the worst part of like modern Final Fantasy stuff. Like, sure. You know, like it just nobody comes out looking good here.
Oh, it's unfortunate.
Yep. So that is that's what I've been into. But like, it's a good fit for the Vita, you know, like, and they've got all kinds of stuff. Like, I don't know if it's like cross buy, like since I bought it there, if it shows up on PS4, but like it'll throw saves in between the other, like it's all this like platform advantage stuff that I don't necessarily like buy into. And I'm going to keep playing it until Pokemon Sun and Moon come out, because I want to scratch that itch. Like doing that waff about Pokemon Yellow kind of, reopened that desire for me, but yeah. Just I just wish I could skip the bullshit, like the stuff that is obviously meant for people who are not me.
yeah
any questions about that?
No, hopefully you warm to it.
Yeah,
no,
I'm gonna keep going for it. Like at end of the day, I'm out some amount of money, but I gave it a shot. World of Final Fantasy, they bit our steves. Mm-hmm. You know what the acronym, like, do you know what the acronym is? WAF. I load up my PS Vita. Damn. You know what I see? I see a symbol that says WAF.
You always envisioned that day happening, just not this way.
No, never like this. Our SEO is poison. they have polluted our namespace. The worst.
I think you guys got squatter's rights for sure.
I think so. I mean, we've been there for enough years that it possibly kicks in. It depends on which state.
You know what you need to do is you need to go sue them for stealing.
Yeah, take it to their door.
Yeah, that seems like the kind of thing you would do.
Yeah,
seems like you guys' style.
Yeah, now you got us. You got our number. You want to button it up?
Sure.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to level number 171, and we really appreciate you sticking around and listening. Remember, coming up next weekend, we have Duckstream, where we're going to be streaming, and that is going to be a good time. It always has been a good time in the past. Go to duckfeed.tv/duckstream or click the banner on the front page of the site to get that information. We're going to be communicating about that a lot in the next couple of weeks. Until that happens, and then obviously, like, during that event, we want to kind of blow open the doors and have it be this big, huge thing. I think that's it. Also, check out the new and updated Patreon reward stuff, like we mentioned at the beginning. It's all good stuff. I think the reaction has been very positive so far, which thumbs up on that.
Good.
Jella, your marathon fundraising, how can people find out about that?
Well, I posted it in the announcement feed and also pinned it to the level Slack channels that is also pinned to the top of my Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I've posted about it on Facebook, but you can also message me. You can locate me in basically anywhere at Jollachan. So yeah, you can send me a message somewhere and I will give you the link. So, yes, if you can't find it on your own, I will get it for you. So. Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, there's the usual stuff. Stick around and listen to the next episode if you can, or go back in the meantime and listen to older episodes here. We put out a lot of stuff here, even just on this show. It's like a weekly show that's about 2 hours, which is crazy. We'll try not to disappear for weeks on end like we just did. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
I think that covers it. Oh, quick follow-up. That thing I said in Child of Light where it's like, hey, what if player two could be the Wisp? That's totally how co-op works. That's cool. Exactly what they do. So
awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Think you got something to look at.
Bring your kid to video game day.
Cool. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
And I am always Jollachan in places.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. Okie doke, what do we got?
I've got how the tables have ... Oh boy.
Okay.
And either.
I don't know. What was that in reference to?
That was when I was talking about the games and I said either.
Ah, yeah.
And it was kind of on repeat.
It's got stuck.
Right after that was Appetizer Alamo.
Hell to the yes.
I like Appetizer Alamo.
Oh, that's a contender, I think.
That's my favorite. And then Jonathan Blow's Pinterest feed, which is not going to happen because it says Jonathan Blow in the title, and then Shitbox, which is not going to happen because cursing. So Appetizer Alamo is the Alamo upon which I will stand.
Shitbox. I'm going to write Shitbox down just because I want to commemorate it. Dennis, you got anything?
Yeah, I had I did this Drek to do that other Drek.
Okay, shorten that to Drek for Drek.
Yep. Okay. I had either as well.
Okay.
Although I want it to be either ether, but it wasn't quite there. But then obviously Head and Shoulders Above the Rest for me is the Appetizer Alamo.
Yeah. I had, hi, I'm Ada. and I also had a Tickle the Art Bone. Yeah. Appetizer Alamo is the clear winner. Like I don't even understand why we are entertaining something else.
It's fun to talk about, prime titles.
Yeah. Well, we got to fill out the list. Yeah, so I think that's everything. I'm gonna. This is where the episode ends. Bye.
Yeah. Run.